Welcome to Search and Rescue Pentagon Escape. Right now we're going to read Mikey at 10:09 a.m. Listen what they say.
Mikey, 10:09 a.m. I don't hear Chad shout, but I do hear him chasino me. I'm quick, and smaller than he is, so I can move around the debris on the floor faster. I make it to the second stairwell just ahead of him. I'm through the door and onto the landing, ducking low because there are dangling wires overhead. As Chad bursts through, I shout a warning to watch out. It's cooler in these stairs, though not by much. Which is weird, because they're closer to the front of the building where the plane hit. Somehow, the fire's bigger and hotter toward the inside than the outside. I don't understand it, but I don't really need to. I just need to keep moving. The building rumbles. I'm taking the steps two at a time, and Chad's right on my tail. It's hard to stay balanced. Everywhere is uneven and wet from the massive amounts of water the firefighters have been spraying since the moment they arrived on the scene. I nearly fall down the stairs, but Chad catches me by the arm, which keeps me from getting impaled on a section of rebar jabbing out from a break in the wall. I told you to go. I yell at him. This is literally my job, Mikey. He says. He sounds kind of mad. I guess I would be too in his situation. And you're gonna need my help. The stair landing is covered in debris, broken bits of the building everywhere, though the door is intact. I touch it and it's hot, but Chad knows better and after he touches it, he slams it open. The fire's burning in this part of Corridor 5, but at random points on the walls and ceiling, and I can see we've got a clear path toward my dad's section. The huge wall that used to separate it from the hall is gone. There are desks and screens and filing cabinets everywhere, along with steel bars and slabs of concrete. Flames burn at random spots like campfires. Ahead are also mountains of burning debris, from floor to ceiling, and in places the smoke is so thick, TC ain't tell the difference between walls and air. Dad! I yell. I don't know what else to do. The yell doubles me over, makes me cough. Chad shoves the athing mask over my mouth again. Mikey, we can't stay here, he says, and he's pulling me down toward the floor and dragging me back toward DE Drive. But I try to object. No one's there, he says. No one alive. I can't leave him. I cry. Without him, they'll put me in foster care. He hesitates. Even under his mask, I see his face twitch. But then he shakes it away, pulls me back. You'll be alive. It's not the end of the world. He's fully dragging me now, and I don't have the strength to resist. Then there's a sudden cracking sound and a whoosh of air from the direction of E-ring. It all happens fast then. Chad says a word I know I shouldn't repeat, and shoves me against the nearest corridor wall, down into a puddle of filthy water. Then he dives his body on top of me, covering me with his back and his fireproof firefighter's coat. I've still got the breathing mask on and haven't dropped the flashlight yet, which is good, because all light vanishes with the loudest sound I've ever heard in my life. The floor shakes, and I lose my footing. A wave of dust and debris crashes down the hall and then over us. I feel my body leave the ground with the force of the shockwave. Though Chad never lets of me go, my ear is by his radio and I hear voices squawking. We have a pancake collapse. E-ring. We-ring collapse. Everything is dark now. I'm pinned below Chad, and I think he's pinned by something else. I'm lying face down. I want to turn my head or sit up, but I can't move. Chad? I say, though my voice is weak. Chad. I try again, firmer. He doesn't answer. I don't know if he's unconscious or just can't hear me. I hear the loud sound of his respirator, so I know he's breathing. My own mask is attached to his tank, so we're sharing air. How long can one of those little tanks last? My shouting and straining probably don't help, so I try to calm myself, to breathe slowly. There's literally nothing else for me to do. I can't save my dad. I can't save Sergeant Ginsler. One put Chet in danger by running this way, and now I can't save him either and stopped him from saving me. Nice job, Mike, I scold myself. You've done it again. In the dark, unable to move, I remember the last time I made a series of dumb decisions that hurt someone. I remember my mom. It turns out I'm reckless, just like her. It was a great day, one of those perfect fall days when the air is crisp and everything smells like possibility. You just know Halloween is right around the corner with all its candy and pranks. We loved Halloween. We would always do these group family costumes, like Mom and Dad as the two robbers in Home Alone and me as Kevin. After their divorce, Mom and I did Pears costumes, Captain Hook and Peter Pan, Flounder and the Little Mermaid. That year I wanted to do Men in Black, from the Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones alien hunting movie. I was excited about it because I thought we'd look cool in black suits and sunglasses. I didn't know we wouldn't even be together by Halloween, thanks to me. We were at a fall carnival that Saturday. It was kind of cool, like a miniature state fair with rides and games and cotton candy and stuff. Mom told me to stay near this one game where she knew the carny, who'd keep an eye on me. It was the game where you throw a ping pong ball into a bottle and if it lands on the top of one without bouncing off, you win a fish. It was boring and rigged, and I didn't want a fish in the first place. So I wandered off to check out the fun house. I loved not knowing what I'd see around the next corner, how the walls bent and twisted, how nothing inside was as it seemed. I was only 10 at the time, and I guess a 10-year-old wandering around alone doesn't look good. A cop found me, asked where my adult was, where I was supposed to be. When he hauled me back to the carny who said he'd watch me, the guy ratted out my mom almost immediately. The police found her in a trailer with a lot of drugs. They say she was selling them, and she was definitely using them. She went to the hospital and then to jail, and because she had a record, I went to a temporary foster home. Then it was court and off to live with my dad. All because I hadn't listened and stayed where I should have. I had just wanted to see the fun house. Some fun I'm having now. I don't think I ever want to be in a fun house again. Mikey. Chad's voice sounds strained. It cuts through my memories. Yeah? My voice is strained too. Are you hurt? I don't think so, I tell him. You? It takes him a while to answer. A piece of wall fell over on us. I can't move it and I can't move out from under it. My legs might be broken. Tough as you are, I don't think you can carry me. But if you try, you might be able to wriggle out from under me and get out of this spot. I can't leave you here, I say, nearly crying as I think about how I got him into this spot in the first place. I think about my mom, who I left behind, and my dad, who I may never see again. I failed everyone just by not listening. Chad lets out a wheezy little laugh. His voice is really muffled through the respirator he's wearing, but I can tell he's laughing. I'm not saying leave me here, kiddo. I'm saying get outside and tell them where I am. He pauses. Do you know where we are? When that shockwave hit, we were in C-Ring, Corridor 5, I say, still proud of how well I remember the layout. Not that it matters anymore, but I could definitely get an A on my Pentagon report. But what if the whole building collapsed on us? I ask. We wouldn't be having this conversation, he says. Can you radio for help? I ask. I can't reach it, but I don't hear any sound anyway, he tells me. I don't think it's working anymore. He's right. It's quiet. For a second, I fear that's because another attack took out the entire building and all the firefighters. I worry there was a nuclear attack and there's no more America, no more world at all, just mutant zombies wandering the wasteland. If I leave Chad here, maybe I'll become one of them too. My imagination is running away from me again. I need to stay in the here and now, not in the there and then. Listen, Chad says, it's hot on my back and I think there's gotta be a lot of fire out there. If we stay here, we will not survive. You need to focus now. Get out of this rubble and get help, okay? Can you do that? I take as deep a breath as I can. I'll do it, I say. I will get you help. I think one more time about the guy stuck under the copier, about Sergeant Ginsler, about my dad. Those were people I didn't help today, but Lena and the baby? That skinny guy who worked with my dad? The people stuck in that upstairs office? I helped all of them. I guess that's what people have to do in a disaster: focus on who they can save, not who they can't. I can save Chad because I have to, and I have to save him because I can. Only lift what you can carry. I got this, I tell him. I start to wriggle out from under Chad. I can tell he's biting back a yell from how much it hurts to have me jostling him. Suddenly, the mask pulls on my face. I realize I have to leave it behind. He's gonna need the air, and anyway, the tank is on his back and there's no getting it off. If there was a way, he'd probably make me take it. I bet he'd say it's his job, though I doubt his job description tells him to jump onto me as a building collapses and protect me with his own body. That's not a job, that's a hero. I'm not gonna let this hero down. You will get out of here, I reassure him as I slip the mask off and wriggle free. I promise. It's a promise I really hope I can keep.